Angel, I know you're not a diehard Broncos guy. You like some of the Denver sports since you've moved here and everything. But even from your standpoint, Elway's the GOAT, right? The Denver GOAT.
Yes.
When we got the news, of course, he and the Broncos organization are parting ways, and we kind of saw that coming. It felt like that was looming over the last 2 years. I don't think it's like an ill will, you're fired type of deal. This is we're all kind of just done. My time's run out.
John, we're tired of seeing you around the office.
Well, it's like, what would you say you do here, you know? And again, when Elway and the organization kind of agreed he would step away as the GM and they hired George Payton, at that point I was like, dude, he's going to ride this thing out until the new ownership comes in. And does he even want to do it anymore? He's 62. Go, you have a lot of money. Go enjoy your life. What would it take? Is there a number of titles or whatever for Joker to pass him? The Joker wins 3 championships before it's all said and done. He's got the 2 MVPs. He's got one more than Elway ever had. Is that the number, or is there a possible way? Is there no way? Because, I mean, Elway was Elway. He was the first real big-time superstar.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely in a transition period with Jokic, you know, starting to hit his prime, and the Broncos themselves have been on the downhill the last couple of years, so it's, you know, you're looking for that next, who's going to be that next star after the Elways and the Mannings and the Sakics and all those guys. So now you're looking at this next crop. You have the McKinnons, the McCars, the Jokic's. You know, you have those guys. And
the CJ Crones.
Yeah, I guess. yeah, but I mean, you're looking for that next guy. And I think Elway's got definitely a head start, but Jokic, I'd say, is the closest. And yeah, I would say you would need more titles than Elway.
Can a hockey guy take over as the GOAT?
If the Avs win like 3 more Stanley Cups, absolutely.
So if he wins 4, if he's part of 4?
If McKinnon wins 4 Stanley Cups,
yes. Even though it's hockey?
Yep.
That's probably fair. What if he wins 4 and Joker wins 3? Does the basketball versus hockey thing bump Joker up?
Well,
Joker's got the MVPs too.
Right.
McKinnon could get one of those, but... Yeah, we think about this. I like the conversation because I've been banging the drum for Nikola Jokic for a long time. You know, I said he was going to be the best Nugget, and I was laughed at for that. That was only 2.5 years ago, and I was laughed at. Our tight-knit brewing poll question of the day is, who's to blame for this current situation that the Nuggets seem to be in? Malone, the bench, Calvin Booth even, or the starter surrounding Joker? I hate this question, but I love this question. I think it's a necessary question. You know, you have to ask it, because somebody's got to be to blame. Maybe it's collective, I get that. My brain keeps going back to Jamal Murray, and I know he got hurt. He only played 9 minutes. I don't know what his health status looks like right now, but he hurt his thumb. He's had issues with that thumb for a while.
Oh, what, he hurt it, I think, last
week.
Yeah,
he kept shaking his hand.
I think he jammed it on something, and, you know, if you jam a finger in basketball, you know,
those things
you
last.
Pull it out of place for a little bit, but it still hurts.
Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, Brady's crooked pinky is staring at me.
Yeah, it wasn't really a jam. It just went straight up one time. Basketball hit it, popped straight up.
No, I mean, look at like a 60-year-old basketball player and look at their hands.
Their hands.
They're all messed up.
Oh, yeah, because that happens all the time. Those balls hit you on the tips there.
It's on his shooting hand, too, so, you know, maybe that's affecting him shot-wise, but...
Mike Singer has him listed as day-to-day in the Denver Post, so we'll see. But they play tomorrow night. But again, injury aside, I've been saying this for years, that I think when Jamal Murray was first drafted and I got to see him as a rookie play for the team, I felt like Jamal was going to be great. You know, I saw it. There was some kind of killer instinct about him that I really thought was going to make him a top point guard in this league. And I said it on this show. I said, Jamal Murray will be better than Steph Curry. And I was wrong. I don't see how Murray becomes better in his next, whatever, 5, 7, 10 years in the league. I think that's part of the reason I've been so critical of Jamal, is because my expectations were so high for Jamal Murray. And to see him just kind of be a guy, I think our boy Smitty texted in and said, Jamal's just a guy. That's And when you say just a guy in sports, it doesn't mean he's just a guy like you and me, Angel. You're just a guy in the NBA. You're just you're a good player. You're good enough to play in the league. You're maybe good enough to start. Right now, it does feel like Jamal Murray is just an NBA player. And I do think that in order for him, in order for the Nuggets to really go to that top of the mountain, I think it does go back to Jamal. And that's not me necessarily being critical. That's me saying that's how good I think he can be. If he is that guy, the Nuggets win a title this year. Because we know Joker's that guy. Porter's a heck of a shooter, and he's getting better in other areas. But I still think Jamal Murray has those spurts that we see, and we go, whoa. The Murray flurry is a good thing and a bad thing. Because when Murray flurry's happening, it's amazing. He looks unbeatable. But the problem is it doesn't happen very often. You probably won't remember this, know this player, Angel. His name was Eddie Jones. He played for the Lakers back in the day. That was when Kobe was there. They called him Superman, but not in the way they called Shaq Superman. They called him Superman because most of the time he was Clark Kent. He was Clark Kent, and then when they really needed him and the Lakers were down and struggling, he'd go run into the phone booth, he'd come out real quick, and he'd tear off the suit and take the glasses off, and he was Superman. He'd fly around, make crazy things happen, and then shortly after that, he'd go back into the phone booth, and then he was just Clark Kent again. You know, he was just a guy. He had a job, he could play in the NBA, but he wasn't a superstar. And I loved Eddie Jones, man. I loved him because I saw some great things from him, but it just wasn't consistent. Jamal Murray reminds me of Eddie freaking Jones. He is Superman in the sense that he's Clark Kent 60% of the time. Maybe 50, to be fair. I need him to go into that phone booth, come out as Superman, and never go back in. That's what I need to see. And we're just not seeing it from Jamal. He has the ability to be Superman. He can fly all over the place, man. But he's also very comfortable just being in his suit and glasses and writing. Isn't he a writer or something? Writing articles for whatever the Metropolitan. Isn't that what the paper is? I don't know. What's the paper?
The Daily Planet.
Same thing.
They live in Metropolis.
Same thing. I'm not Micah, okay? I don't have the Nerd Zone report. Does that make sense, though? That's what we need to see. We need to see him put the suit on and never take it off.
Guess, but I think that what makes Superman so admirable is that he is just the regular guy, and he only shows out when he really needs to. But it's always he's always going to go back to that regular guy.
Oh, I hate
it's
that.
It's that super part that makes him Superman. Otherwise, he's just man.
But that's the problem. You're not going to win a title with just Clark Kent. Clark Kent can't lift a building. I mean, he can, but
Clark Kent can get Lois Lane. Superman can't.
Took the glasses off. It's a different guy.
No.
Whoa! Who the hell is this? Well, no. That guy I was just talking to had glasses on. You're not him.
You're strangely buff, Clark. What's your workout routine?
Right, he's jacked and he's walking around in a suit. He's got glasses, and then suddenly you see Superman on the TV. And he doesn't have glasses.
I'm nerdy. I got to go write a story.
Yeah, the guy I was talking to had glasses. You can't get many past me, my old friend. You're not Clark Kent.
Well, we don't have phone booths anymore.
So that's true. So maybe that's why Jamal can't go and change out.
Yeah, I mean, if you go in the locker room, it's suddenly a controversy if you leave the bench.
It's true. Maybe he needs to do that as more of a message type thing.
So maybe
he's going
we don't,
to the locker room, coming out. Here we go.
Don't start him and just have him come out like 5 minutes into the game, just running out of the locker room. Here comes Jamal Murray.
I mean, trust me, there was a day I was like, would Jamal be good off the bench? I mean, you're not
practically on the bench now.
Well, I know, but it's weird. Would he be good off the bench joining the starters for a minute? Be sixth man. Now, you won't be able to do that. Not now. But it was something I thought about a year or two ago. It was like, if he's better in spurts, maybe he sits there on the bench and gets amped up watching the starters play. And then he comes out and bam, he's rolling and you get a Murray flurry. You know, again, not happening. No way. Malone loves himself some Jamal Murray, just like George Karl loved himself some Andre Miller. Different players, but still. Eastside Chris, I'm thinking the self-called all-star millionaire players need to step up. Who's self-called all-star? Jamal? Did he say he was an all-star? He said, shouldn't need a let's go out and win one for the Gipper rah-rah speech. Do your job. Well, then why do you employ a coach? I mean, coaches are there for that stuff. They gotta be there.
I mean, there's only so much you can tell your team before the game tips off. Like, I can't tell you we're playing for the one seed tonight. I'll tell you it five more times. That's not going to change that that's what's going on. That's what's in front of you. I, as the coach, will give you the opportunity. Once you're on the floor, I can yell at you, but you're the guys out there doing it, and you're not bringing the effort.
Dixon says, it's a long season. You're going to have some good runs and some bad ones. There really isn't any one thing to play it on or blame it on. They have some guys banged up and are still figuring out the right concoctions off the bench, as some guys have just now been showing out, like Christian Brown and Watson. Why wasn't Christian Brown and Watson playing,
though? The whole second
half
of the season was supposed to be fixing the bench.
Right, and so that's what I'm saying. You're saying that they're just now showing out. Well, you sat Christian Brown down for like 10 games after the trade deadline or after the All-Star break. You traded Bones Highland, and we all said, was the emergence of Christian Brown, did that give the Nuggets more confidence to make this move? And we all agreed, yes. But then suddenly, he doesn't play. And now you're seeing him show up. Where was Watson all year? Why aren't we experimenting with him at certain points?
He was in Grand Rapids all year.
I mean, but you call him up. You know, why not? Why not do that earlier? And I know that, is that a Malone? Maybe that's not a Malone decision, I guess. But still, all right, 17 minutes after the hour. Avs talk coming up next with our guy, Kyle Fredrickson, from the Denver Gazette. We'll be looking forward to that conversation coming up. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy, a Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The boys of summer are back. Hear Rockies baseball on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Joel Cantalamessa from RamNation.com. You're listening to The Hull Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
We're officially in the Blink 182 mode now because the Avs, the real bright spot of the day today, have clinched the playoffs, and we'll see if they can go defend the Stanley Cup as we get closer and closer to the postseason. Kyle Fredrickson joining us right now, the beat writer for the Avs of the Denver Gazette. Kyle, you probably never get sick of hearing that song, man. Probably never, right?
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? They sort of peeled back from playing it at games. I am curious to see if it comes back. It was definitely the unofficial anthem for the state. Last summer, it felt like.
Well, and I feel like it kind of revived Blink 182. Strangely enough, I mean, the Avs winning a cup and going on that epic run, they played that song all the time, and then that became a national thing in the playoffs. So, Blink 182, you're welcome, right? From the Avs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all the old fogies like me and you, you know, we can tell the youngins about what that was like to listen to them back in the day. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun for sure, and I'm sure. You know, if it's not that song, there'll be another anthem this year of some sort.
Do you want them to have a new anthem, or they got to stay with that one, right? They got to stick with that. That was magical.
Well, selfishly for me, I heard it so many times that I think I wouldn't mind a new one. It is very cool to hear a crowd sing in unison that loud and for that long as that verse continues during play. That's really my favorite part about it.
Kyle, talk to us about this team, man. I mean, we saw quite the interesting contrast last night, in my opinion. You saw the Rockies do Rockies things, and that's lose. Even though they had small opportunities, they get bases loaded, no outs, they lose. The Nuggets are a good team, maybe a great regular season team, but they really needed to win a game against Houston last night, and they weren't there. The effort wasn't there. You see the Avs, they needed to win a game, and they found a way to do it. It was tougher than expected, but they found a way. And they got themselves in the playoffs with all the injuries, everything that's mounted up. How in the heck has Jared Bednar and this crew stayed together to find a way to do this? Because I had doubts like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, you know, me too. Looking back at mid-January, I think, is when the team was really starting to slide. People wondered if this team was built for it. Well, you know, were they going to miss the playoffs entirely? But just looking at the numbers since, and, you know, this is a stat from Brendan McNicholas, who does a great job as a PR guy with the Avs, but over their last 36 games, they only have 10 losses, and that's the second-best record in the league next to Boston. So that shows you really what that jump was like over that period of time. And in terms of how this team has done it, it's really been, I think, a lot of this championship character that's carried over from a year ago, where the team is really finally locked in. You know, this was the shortest offseason that the Avs could have imagined. They've got a ton of injuries to deal with this entire year. So I think they reached maybe kind of their bottom there in January and thought, all right, we have to play better if we're going to get back to being in cup contention. And they've proven that they have that character and talent to do it. And we've seen it. You know, the top guys have been phenomenal. You know, Nathan MacKinnon with 100 points on the season, Mikko on the doorstep of 50 goals. They've been getting a lot of great depth contributions over the past few games from a lot of random guys. Jack Johnson with 2 goals over his past 4 games. So it hasn't been pretty at times. This isn't a front-running team that has been blowing away opponents and is just kind of waiting for the playoffs to start, you know, which is kind of the case a year ago. But they certainly have shown, you know, in bursts that they're still the same team that can contend with at least certainly anybody in the West at this point. Which should be exciting for Avalanche fans. I think this team is very unpredictable. They could be a first-round bust, or they could get all the way to the final. I really wouldn't be surprised either way.
Kyle, what are the realistic expectations? I mean, last year, there was a lot of pressure on Jared Bednar to get past at least the second round. Otherwise, maybe the Avs are moving on. This year, given the injuries, how difficult it is to repeat and all that, what would be considered disappointing for the Avs as far as how they do in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think looking at their roster and you know, the potential now of finishing first in the Central Division, which seemed like such a long shot just a couple of months ago, like we were just talking about, I think anything short of, you know, getting to the Western Conference Final would be pretty disappointing, if only just because the West is disappointing as well this year. There aren't teams you know, that really are standing out like there are in the West or in the East right now. You know, it's just, you know, clearly high caliber elite teams that are poised to win a cup. The West has kind of been jumbled. You know, the fact that the Avs are sitting atop the Central, tied in points now with the Stars and the Wild is really a reflection of just kind of how everyone's been a little bit up and down. You know, Dallas has been a lot healthier than the Avs this year. But at the same token, you know, Jason Robertson has had a great year, but they haven't had those complete game performance and really having all those 4 lines step up in the way that Colorado has. So Colorado might be a deeper team. They might be favorable, I think, in the series against the Stars. So, you know, that's just one example that there's so much shakeup that could happen now over the next 6 games. But I will say it's a favorable schedule for the Avs for the most part, right? They're going back to San Jose tonight. I'm in California now for that game, and that should be another very winnable one. You got to play at the Kings in a couple days, and that's another playoff team. I'm really looking forward to being there as well. But then, you know, they have another game against the Anaheim Ducks to close out the road trip. You know, a team that's also, you know, not in a position to be in the playoffs this year. So, you know, a couple more tough home games to finish it out, and then they go to Nashville on the road as the last game of the season. But by all means, I think the Avs are in position to win the Central, and it's important this year because being that they're not front runners. I mean, that home ice advantage, the Avs should be looking for every advantage they can get, you know, to put themselves in position to get back to the finals.
Yeah, and again, just looking at how tight this race is, that game last night was so big for so many reasons, obviously clinching the playoffs, but as you mentioned, popping you up in that top spot there, all 3 teams you mentioned with the Stars and the Wild with 98 points. So this is what you love about, you know, we always say it's such a long season. Why do they have so many games? Well, this is why. You get down to it, and you still got 5-6 games left, and there's still so much to decide.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a historic season. You know, I'm actually selfishly glad that Mikko hit the bar last night on that really close-up shot that would have been goal number 50, just because I'm hoping to get the chance to see it in person tonight. Mm. And, you know, it's just to see him have this kind of year is really great, just because he's a very likable guy in the locker room, but he's never really been relied upon as the guy like he has this year with Landeskog out all year and MacKinnon missing 11 games earlier in the season. You know, to see Mikko doing that is really impressive and, you know, really kind of highlights what, you know, maybe it's been a challenging season in some ways, but, you know, as an Avalanche fan and as someone who just enjoys hockey, you know, to see some of these individual performances come out of this year, it's been pretty special.
Well, and another one, as you mentioned, too, was Nathan MacKinnon getting to a 100-point season, the first of his career. And we were kind of, you know, with the, a day where we're talking about John Elway moving on from the Broncos organization, it has us kind of thinking about the great ones. And John is certainly one of them, is throughout the state of Colorado. But Nathan MacKinnon just continues it every single year to put his name up there when you're talking about the Mount Rushmores and such. If Nathan MacKinnon's not on people's Mount Rushmore, he's certainly close.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, I think it's great for him personally, even if you won't admit it, that he got to this marker, right? 100 points. I think it's sort of, you know, been one of the things that's hung over his career, if anything, about just sort of this threshold that he's never been on. And, you know, if you're going to want to put yourself up there with the McDavid and company of the world, you know, the very best of the best, so those are the guys who, you know, are hitting that number every year. And, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but the fact that MacKinnon got to that number and also missed, you know, I think 10, 11 games, which it was never specified, but it looked like it was kind of a oblique or abdominal injury, you know, never a good thing for a hockey player. It's a tough thing to get over sometimes. It's impressive. And, you know, for Nate, to his credit, he's been the same guy through and through, you know, in all of this. You know, one thing I marvel at with the Avalanche this season on their power play, which is one of the best in the league, you know, they're really not very fancy with it. The game plan is when MacKinnon's on the ice, is give the puck to 29 and then get out of the way. And, you know, his zone entries are so powerful, and getting to watch him do that on a nightly basis, it's special. And you're right, you know, put him on the Mount Rushmore for sure, because when you talk about, you know, longevity of career, skill of player, you know, I think MacKinnon's best hockey is still in him, you know, being a guy, you know, now who's, you know, he's got 100 points, you know, when does he win the Hart? You know, when does he, you know, get some of these national accolades that, you know, Connor McDavid seems to be getting every year? You know, I think for Nate, for him, I'm sure that's part of his next motivation going forward here.
Yeah, no question about it, man. I mean, it's just so interesting covering and following both these teams, or you cover, of course, the Avs so closely, but you see the other stuff that's going on with the Nuggets and everything.
Sure.
I mean, you just see, this is what greatness looks like. You know, the Avs win a cup. It was greatness. They are challenged with so many injuries and things throughout the course of the season. They find a way somehow to get there. And now we're waiting to see if the Nuggets can follow behind that. But the different organizations at this point. One is just a winner. They know how to win. They bring it a lot. And the Nuggets still trying to figure that out.
Sure. And, you know, it's been a while since I've been in a Michael Malone press conference, but I've been through several over the years, you know, during my time with the Post. And, you know, I think Malone has this fire that's needed from a head coach, and I think he ultimately will be the guy to bring a title to Denver if it does happen for this team. But there's just sort of this kind of unevenness about him, and especially with his interactions with the media and perceived maybe throwing guys under the bus when things aren't going well, that you just don't get with Bednar. You know, it's even and steady, you know, pretty much 100% of the time. You know, there was a lot lost a few nights ago where he critiqued some players as being passengers. And, you know, that's pretty much the biggest critique we've gotten from him in terms of, you know, a spicy comment, you know, a passenger being a guy who's just on the ice and just there for the ride, as opposed to really dictating the play. So, you know, he's kind of refused to follow up on the comment, wouldn't say who the players that he was talking about, but said that he addressed it. But to me, it was sort of this sign of, okay, here's a guy who really knows, you know, when to play his cards in the media and when to play things close to the chest. You know, of course, we'd love to get Malone quotes about how, you know, guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing and things have to change. And you know, he can't coach effort, you know, basically stuff like that. But I don't know if that's so great for team morale or championship culture. So we'll see. You know, maybe that's nitpicking at this point. And, you know, with Jokic, that cures all ills. But you're certainly right that the Avs just kind of operate at a different frequency than everybody else, and you can see it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we'll see what this run looks like. As you said, there's more to be determined in the standings and how this is going to work out, but we do know that the Avs are in. They're going to get a shot to defend that Stanley Cup. Kyle, my man, what are you working on at the Denver Gazette? You talked to us, I think, last week about your piece on Nichushkin that you were putting together. Excellent stuff by you.
Thank you.
I love that. I love those stories too, getting into depth on those players. But what else are you working on that we can check out?
Yeah, so I guess the most immediate thing, and I touched on it earlier, was just sort of examining Mikko Rantanen's season, right? I mean, not only is he about to cross this 50-goal barrier, but he's been such a leader on the team, you know, in the absence of Gabe Landeskog. And it's interesting with him because he's been around for a long time, Mikko, right? I mean, he was drafted, you know, gosh, I don't remember the year anymore, but I think he's been in the league 6 or 7 years. Progressed to a point now where he's a 50-goal scorer, but it was never ordained, right? He was the 10th pick in the draft, but a guy who had to develop to get to this point. And so examining that has been a lot of fun. And really even going back to the roots, you know, Mikko told me about summers growing up in Finland. His dad built him this big wooden contraption to shoot goals when he didn't have any ice. And there wasn't even a net, but basically it was just a bunch of angled wood that allowed him to shoot at some targets and collect pucks in a big bucket. So it was fun, you know, learning that from Mikko and his story, because certainly a guy it's easy to root for as an Avalanche fan, and has been so fun to watch. I mean, the way he leverages his body to win puck battles in tight areas, and just that hammer of a shot. I mean, it's been a joy to cover Mikko this season, especially without Gabe there. You know, for me, he's really been that captain of the room in the absence of Landeskog.
I'll be looking forward to that one. Last one for you, Kyle. The injury situation, you just mentioned Gabriel Landeskog. What is that looking like for this team going forward?
Okay, so just what we know right now, you know, the newest members of that injured list are Cale Makar and Darren Helm. They didn't play in last night's overtime win. But to me, that feels a little bit more like maintenance going down the stretch against a bad Sharks team. Maybe, you know, Bednar's hoping to just have those guys fresh. I'm hoping to get a little bit more insight on that from Bednar tomorrow at morning skate. But also the Avs traveled all their injured guys, so it's possible that Pavel Francouz, Josh Manson, and Arturi Lehkonen could all play at some point during this four-game swing. I wouldn't say it's overly likely that any of those guys come back. This kind of seems symbolic to me, you know, bring all your injured guys in the last long road trip. The Avs have today off. I'm sure everyone's bonding, even the injured guys with Gabe. I think that's good for team morale, but we'll see. You know, stranger things have happened. I don't expect Landy to be among those guys who comes back for sure. It seems like he's still far out. But it wouldn't shock me if one of those three other guys, you know, came back, you know, maybe for that Kings game or the Anaheim game the night after that.
All right, my man. Well, we'll look out for your updates and your great stuff as well via Twitter, Denver Gazette, all of it. Keep up the great work, and we'll look to catch up with you soon.
All right, sounds great. Appreciate it.
Kyle Fredrickson from the Denver Gazette talking all things Avs with us there. Some special stuff going on with the Avs. I mean, and they're trying to round out this season. They've got momentum on their side where it feels like the Nuggets are sputtering right now. They're like your Rockies bus at this point. They're trying to get to the finish line of the regular season, but the vehicle's barely running. Like I said, dude, it's like cars. You're going to have to stick your tongue out at the end just to come up with a three-way tie here. But we'll see when you get to the playoffs. Maybe things will change, and we'll find out. All right, 36 minutes after the hour. Let's take a quick break. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Chris Abshire, Fort Collins, Colorado, and you are listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Want to thank a new sponsor of the show, and that's Shields. Man, if you haven't been to Shields, what are you waiting for? Angel, what are you waiting for, dude? It will change your life, and I'm not just saying that. They have everything. You name it, they have it. Fish?
Yeah.
Bowling? Legos? They got it, man. Hunting?
I need a reason to be out there.
They got it all. They're in Johnstown, of course. You'll see them right off of Highway 34 near the interstate. Stop in there, man, and just be delighted. When you walk in, it's a completely different world than anything you're used to. That Shields Sporting Goods store in Johnstown, Colorado. They got shoes, gear for sports, outdoor recreation, merchandise with sports teams' logos and everything. That's Shields in Johnstown. And like I said, walk in there, get on the Ferris wheel, and shout it out loud that you heard about it right here on the whole show powered by PDC Energy. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. On Gel, was it the Auburn head football coach?
Yes.
That has some interesting thoughts on the spring game and what we could possibly do to make it a little more interesting?
Yeah, it's very rare for me to give Auburn credit for anything. But their coach, Hugh Freeze, did a press conference the other day, and he brought up the idea, instead of ending spring practice with a traditional spring game with your own players and your own team, what if you scrimmaged another school?
Mm.
He offered the ideas of, he said, quote, Alabama could play Troy and we play UAB or vice versa, whichever, I don't care, Alabama State or whoever. People will come to see it.
I think you'd have more of a draw and you could sell tickets to that. And
you decrease your injuries by 50%.
Why? Because
half your team isn't playing.
Oh, there you go. That's very true.
That Auburn math for you.
That is Auburn math. Huh.
So could you see like a CSU scrimmaging UNC for spring?
That'd be cool. I'd love it. I mean, what are the benefits, I guess? Are the benefits that you get tape of you versus an actual opponent and it's not just yourself? Because, I mean, these guys are practicing against each other for several weeks and then they go play against each other. So they kind of have an idea of the plays being ran and everything. And I guess this gives you some real tape to watch against an opponent, be it a lesser opponent. It does give you more to look at.
UAB's head coach Trent Dilfer actually responded saying, yeah, of course, Hugh's right. Whether you're Auburn or Alabama, you're looking for live competition. You're looking not to play yourself. I think if you're one of these lower schools, you're looking to hopefully play people that are perceived to be much better than you so you can use it as a test to see where you're at.
Interesting. Well, and you still don't hit the quarterback, right?
Yeah, obviously, like, spring rules would still apply. That would be up to the coaches to say, hey, do not hit their other quarterback or you're running laps after practice.
Yeah, you'd have to be, you know, whatever. Something would have to – pretty severe punishment there.
But now you're not getting players like, oh, I don't want to hit my teammate that hard. I don't want to hurt him on, like, I know I'm a safety. I'm going to light him up on this crossing route, but I don't want to get him hurt. If it's another team, you go all out.
I just wonder, I mean, if you do get injuries more because it's – you don't, you're not in season as much, but – because, I mean, you're only practicing for a couple of weeks leading up to it. I don't know. I mean, it makes it – if I'm a coach, I got real film that I can watch of us against an opponent that doesn't know our plays. And locally, as a fan, yeah, I'd much rather see CSU play UNC than CSU play CSU or UNC play UNC. And I like Ed Lamb, they're just doing something creative because spring game doesn't mean that much right now. Because, again – if I score on you, but, I mean, you know the play or whatever.
It's good on defense, bad on offense.
Right.
You know, whichever.
Right. So, because, again, if you're a defense and I know the play call, I know what your formation, because I've been seeing it all week, and then I get an interception, is that really great? Or is it because I just knew exactly what you were going to run?
And you're still running pretty vanilla schemes in these spring games anyway.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept. I mean, from the fan standpoint, sure, it's awesome. Like, Ed Lamb for UNC is basically like, you know, the practices are fun and everything, or they're good, but the spring game itself isn't that important, so we're going to let donors come out and call the game, call plays and stuff. And some people, like, initially look at that and go, what? That's kind of gimmicky. It's the spring game. The spring game is gimmicky. To actually play a game and then advertise it and promote it, it's a gimmick.
They're not really going all out in the spring game either. Like, the guys that are fighting for a roster spot, yeah, but they're doing scrimmages in practice weeks that we're not seeing, that they're actually working on stuff.
Yeah.
Spring game is kind of just, all right, let's put the pads on, let's get out there, let's hit each other a little bit, and let's see what this is before we close down spring.
Well, even CSU's gimmicky with how they do it with Jay Norvell. I mean, they have the starters, and the backups are up 21-0 or something like that. I think that's how they do it. And then the starters have to come back and try to win or whatever. But,
well, if we're going into this area of spring games are suddenly being sold out now because they're big deals, why not try to make some incentive of it and get two teams in there, get two fan bases together, have a little spring football?
I wonder how hard that would be to get done. You know, because that doesn't sound like a bad... I'm just trying to think. I mean,
and
injuries...
You wouldn't have to mandate it. You could just say, hey... Like,
if you want to.
If you want to do it, you find a school that wants to do it, and you put it together.
I would like to see that. Or Wyoming come down here, or UNC go up there and play. Sorry. Sure. But that would be pretty cool. I think I would be in on that idea. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. No Nuggets tonight. No Avs tonight, No Rockies tonight, right? They're off today.
They're all giving us a day off.
They're giving us a day off from a, what a kind of a stressful night. Mike texting in, think back to 2018, the win in advance, lose or go home game, 82 against the Blazers. Was that what it was? Oh, no, the Timberwolves, T-Pups, the Timberwolves. Nuggets got smoked. We go to the playoffs in 18. We win game 7 in 2019. We go to the Western Conference in 19. We go to the finals in 20. Malone is Mark Jackson. We need to find our Steve Kerr. That's right. That's where you are right now.
Does it have to be a former Nugget or a former player?
No, you just got to find your guy that comes in and is, okay, Mark Jackson was good at getting the base laid down, but who's the guy that can get him over the hump and get the best out of these guys? I mean, this is a conversation I've had for a long time now. I love Michael Malone. I'm a fan of his. I love George Karl. They couldn't get their guys over the hump, and we're about to find out if Malone is Jared Bednar or George Karl.
So we saw that one case with Steve Kerr, and we see how that worked out. What about a guy like Steve Nash when he was with Brooklyn?
And then we learned that Brooklyn's was a fiasco. It wasn't just Steve Nash.
Right, but it's not always, oh, just throw a former player in there like Steve Kerr did.
True, true.
It worked. So there's the good and the bad parts of that.
Well, they obviously, the interview must have blown him away with Kerr because he, you know, he played for the Bulls. He was on those some of those championship teams. He was an analyst on TNT forever. I always loved hearing him on TNT. And then he interviewed. So he didn't have coaching experience. Jason Kidd, that guy's had some failures, and now, well, it's kind of looking like the Mavs might have some more of those coming up. But I kind of thought at some point Jason Kidd was going to get this thing rolling. Chauncey Billups with Portland. We'll see. They're not good now. They're not a good team. And I like Chauncey. I'm rooting for him, but I don't see it. I'm not seeing it right now anyway. The problem, the scary part with Malone, and we'll wrap it up with this, is the trajectory was so good when he got here. You know, he got here, they were better than the year before under Brian Shaw. The second year, they won more games than he won in his first year. The third year, they won more games than they won in his second year, and they were one game away from getting into the playoffs. The fourth year, they go to the playoffs. They won, right? They won in the first round. The fifth year was, I think, the year that they went to, that was the bubble year, wasn't it? They go to the Western Conference Finals. And then after that, they could take a step down. They get smoked by the Suns in the second round. But you were without Jamal Murray. And then last year, you lose in the first round of Golden State. There are all reasons for that. Jamal's injury, MPJ's injury last year, too. I get that. But the trajectory was going so high up all the time for Malone, and he's hit a ceiling. And now you're looking at it, can you bust through the ceiling like Jared Bednar did, or are we going to have to find our Jared Bednar? 49 minutes after the hour, let's get to what we learned today coming up on the other side. It's the whole show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hear local coaches, players, and more with Coach Speak. Weekdays 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, current NFL wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
The next time you get angry over a bad play, remember you need teamwork to win, not arguments.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey, hey, what do you say?
What did we learn on this fifth day of April, this official Andrew Alirez Day in Greeley, Colorado, at least? Awesome. I learned that from you, Angel. Thank you for that. I learned that there's a very big difference going on right now between the Avs, Nuggets, and the Rockies. You got three teams that are on different planets today, at least. You got the Avs that are going to defend a Stanley Cup, and they needed a win last night, and they fought it out. It wasn't easy, but they found a way to get it done. The Nuggets needed a win last night to clinch the number one seed, and they didn't show up. It was embarrassing. It was awful. And the Rockies just continue to be kind of a bad baseball team early in the season. We'll see what happens. But today, anyway, that's what I learned. That's the difference between the three. Can that change? Absolutely, that can change. Are we going to see Michael Malone go the way of Mark Jackson or the way of Jared Bednar? We'll soon find out. Angel?
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of those same things. Like, I mean, I looked at it differently. I put the blame on Jokic for last night's game, for a lot of the stuff that's gone on in the last month. I'm put that more, a little bit more on Malone, a little bit more on just, you know, my whole focus in the second half was the bench unit getting figured out. I couldn't tell you who the five bench players are at this point. I just want the playoffs now. Like, I'm just over the regular season at this point. I'm tired of the narrative changing every single day. Let's get to the playoffs and see what this team's really made of.
Well, as to these long seasons, you get to it, especially when you're a good team in the regular season. You're just tired of it. Maybe the Nuggets are tired of it, too. It's time to just get there and see what you really have. Do you have the dogs? Dixon said, the Nuggets need Joker to be Joker, Murray to be Bubble Murray, and MPJ to hit 4 or 5 threes a game, and Gordon to completely stop shooting. Yeah, you need all those, man. You need all those for sure. We'll see. I mean, I think this all rests on Jamal Murray. I mean, I'm not blaming Murray necessarily, but I've held you up on a pedestal for years, and it's time to deliver that. No more Clark Kent. Go into the phone booth, come out as Superman, and never go back. No more glasses. No more suit and tie. It's time for the suit and cape. That'll do it for us. Good night, Northern Colorado.